How low were you willing to go before you reach all your selfish goals? Impatient after impatient, this means war. This means war.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Kate Gould, who is the Legislative Associate for Middle East Policy for the Friends Committee on National Legislation, a Quaker lobby in the public interest, fielding the largest team of registered peace lobbyists in Washington, D.C. She lobbies on Iran and Israel-Palestinian peace and blogs at fcnl.org. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kate Gould.
Well, thanks so much, Ian, for having me.
And you're very busy on the Hill, along with a good friend of mine, Lawrence Wilkerson, Colin Powell's former chief of staff, and Colin Carl, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for the Middle East, and others are very alarmed at the Lieberman resolution on Iran that appears to be an effort on the part of Senator Lieberman, I guess by extension also McCain and Lindsey Graham, to basically force the president's hand, just as the president has gotten the Iranians to come to the negotiating table because of the pressure from the ramped up sanctions. So lay out the groundwork for our listeners, if you will.
Sure. Well, yes, this is a very dangerous resolution. It's actually, there's a resolution in the House and the Senate pushing for lowering the threshold for war with Iran and making an impossible list of ultimatums that Iran would have to meet, which, of course, would make diplomacy impossible and war all but inevitable. So there has been a host of national security experts who've spoken out against this, and you mentioned Colonel Wilkerson, who I've been lobbying with him on the Hill, and then also Colin Kale, and also a number of, well, now we have Senator Feinstein and Senator Rand Paul, who have spoken out against it. Also Paul Pillar, CIA veteran. So all these people have spoken out against it precisely because it puts so much pressure on the administration to abandon diplomacy and push for war. It's a non-binding resolution. However, it's changing the debate in Washington. It's trying to redefine the terms of what the U.S. so-called red line is, that point at which the U.S. would take military action. President Obama made it very clear at the AIPAC conference, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee conference, that the red line with Iran is when it acquires a nuclear weapon, that's the U.S. red line. Panetta has said that as well. But they want to change that red line so that we would rule out any kind of diplomatic option toward Iran in respect to it being nuclear weapons capable, which is an imprecise term. Arms control experts have said it's actually not a scientific term; it's a political term. It could be used to define civilian nuclear programs all over the world, and they would actually use that to define when the U.S. should attack Iran and go for full-fledged war.
Well, for example, Japan is nuclear weapons capable. It has vast stocks of plutonium, but it doesn't have a nuclear weapons program. It's a totally ambiguous term. So the red line is now moved from acquiring nuclear weapons to being in this amorphous area of being capable at some point of building a nuclear weapon.
Exactly. I mean, I think what this is really about is saying in a very veiled way that Iran would have to give up its entire civilian nuclear program. It would have to entirely capitulate to the U.S. And if it doesn't do that, then it's time for war. And that's what this is really about. I mean, there. In addition to these resolutions, Senator Lieberman led a letter. It was actually a bipartisan letter in the Senate that said that Iran would have to sustain its enrichment for an undefined period of time. I mean, to give up its civilian nuclear program, or else there just shouldn't be talks. That this is not the time for confidence-building measures, they say. Of course, everyone knows are all U.S. and Western officials involved with negotiating with Iran, everybody from, you know, neoconservative-leaning Ambassador Dennis Ross to others have pointed out, well, that's impossible. And getting Iran to give up its civilian nuclear program, that's impossible, and it's not a worthy goal. It's arguably not a legal goal, since Iran has the right to a civilian nuclear program under the Non-Proliferation Treaty. So it's making impossible demands, and it's really just paving the, setting the groundwork for war.
Now, it's hardly a coincidence, though, surely, Kate, that April the 13th to the 14th, coming up in the next few days, is the round of talks that the U.S. and Iran are about to hold. It's taken a long time for the U.S. and Iran to even talk. There was a brief flurry when Obama first came in and the U.S. kind of lost interest or got frustrated with the Iranians, which they are obviously incredibly frustrating to deal with. But more recently, there have been some very severe sanctions, and the ability for Iran to collect its oil revenues is now drying up. They can't do any bank transactions around the world. These sanctions are really trying to bite. These are the very things that the neocons were calling for. Now that they're working and Iran has agreed to come to the table, it apparently is not enough for the Liebermans of this world.
That's right, yeah. And not only that, Congress passed a sanctions package recently in December that is not going to the central bank sanctions, I think, that you were referring to, that basically cut off, sanction any government or any company that does any kind of business with Iran, that would cut them off from the U.S. financial system. And these sanctions aren't going to even take effect until the summer, and already there's another Iran sanctions package before those sanctions have even gone into effect. So I think it's a very unfortunate demonstration of how sanctions are being pursued for sanctions' sake, rather than even an attempt to use them for leverage. They're being pursued to just show that we want to be more and more aggressive toward Iran without actually thinking through the consequences of these sanctions. And I think you're right. I mean, we've seen some tentative efforts at diplomacy in the past. Under the Obama administration, there's only been two rounds of talks before, two official meetings that have gone on, with the only reported talks with one-on-one with Iran under the Obama administration lasted for less than an hour. The bilateral talks, and then there's also been these multilateral talks. But all in all, there's been very little diplomacy, and we've seen that when there were very promising signals for diplomacy, that they were sabotaged, and they were sabotaged by hardliners on both sides. We've seen them sabotaged by hardliners in Iran when the Obama administration offered this fuel swap deal in 2009, and then we also saw when they actually agreed to that fuel swap deal that was negotiated by Turkey and Brazil, then it was the U.S. that backed out. And it was the U.S. that that actually decided to go with sanctions at the U.N. Security Council, yet another round of sanctions at the U.N. Security Council, rather than take Iran up on its offer to transfer a bomb's worth of low-enriched uranium out of Iran. Not to get into the weeds too much, but I think there's clearly the technical possibilities are out there to make these kinds of deals possible, but the question is there the political will to have this be not just a one-off? Thomas Pickering, former ambassador, has said at a recent Senate hearing that the problem with U.S.-Iran negotiations is it's been a series of one-night stands, and there hasn't actually been any kind of sustained engagement. So, we don't want to have this just be some kind of one-off event that is used to actually as a pretense for harsher action. We want to see sustained talks, the only way that conflict is resolved.
And Kate Gould, of course, when more recently Secretary of State Clinton was meeting with the Turks in Turkey, the head of the Iranian program did show up to head those off, at least that's the assumption. The Israelis launched a covert operation to blow up a Iranian scientist, and Hillary Clinton went public in anger, obviously feeling that was designed to sabotage efforts for them to get together, where she repudiated the killing of the Iranians and said that the U.S. had absolutely nothing to do with it, not that that carried any water with the Iranians. But the long and the short of it is that the fact that she stepped out in front of the microphones indicated, at least to me, that she was really furious with what the Israelis had done.
Yeah, that's very important move. And I think it does carry weight with the Iranians as well. I mean, I think that was a very positive move that the administration made. More important that they, it seems like it was a very honest statement that the U.S. did not have involvement with that. Anyway, I hope that's the case. It's hard to tell exactly what went on, but it's very important to hear that the administration saying that the U.S. has no interest in being involved with those kinds of attacks. Although we do hear alarming reports, other incidents of covert action that the U.S. May have been involved with, as per Seymour Hersh's recent bombshell article about U.S. support of the Iranian opposition group, the MEK. But I think it's very important. I mean, those kinds of moves, there have been steps that the Obama administration has taken for a diplomatic solution with Iran. And what's so important, though, is that whether it's Obama or any other administration, they have to have the political space to make this kind of difficult deal possible. And unfortunately, so many in Congress have been closing down that political space. Although we are seeing now this resolution and the sanctions bill. I mean, this was supposed to be last month's news. It was supposed to have passed already after the AIPAC conference, according to a lot of staff we've talked to. But it has been delayed, and that's good news. I mean, we've gotten thousands of calls to Congress and thousands, tens of thousands of messages from various organizations working on this, and coalition letters and lobby visits and security officials speaking out. And, so there is definitely momentum against this move and a momentum that where people are sending the message to Congress, let's give diplomacy a chance. Let's give these talks a chance.
Well, but specifically, Kate Gould, hasn't Senator Rand Paul in the United States Senate held up Lieberman's resolution?
Exactly. I mean, yes, and we especially have him to thank for the stalling of this dangerous legislation. So he's blocked the Iran sanctions package, which was originally, the idea was that that Graham and Senator Lieberman were going to attach their awful resolution to the Iran sanctions package. And anyway, he held up the Iran sanctions package wholesale and said that unless there is an amendment inside of it that says that the legislation will not be used to authorize the use of force and clarify that this is not an authorization, that Congress must authorize any use of force against Iran or Syria, that he would block the legislation from passing under unanimous consent. So, what's particularly alarming about this resolution is that it's been slated for unanimous consent, not even a vote. But thanks to Rand Paul, it has been blocked. And unfortunately, that block is time-limited, so we're not sure exactly when that will be lifted. But we are expecting a vote in the upcoming weeks, unless there's major outcry.
Again, I'm speaking with Kate Gould, who is the Legislative Associate for Middle East Policy for the Friends Committee on National Legislation, a Quaker lobby in the public interest, fielding the largest team of registered peace lobbyists in Washington, D.C. And we're talking about the Lieberman resolution that Senator Rand Paul has managed to block, but it is coming up for a vote soon. And this is a way, essentially, to tie the hands of President Obama, who is now, because of the sanctions that the Obama administration have imposed on Iran, brought Iran to the negotiating table for the April 13th, 14th round of talks meant to revive the diplomatic track. The point, you just to clarify a couple of things for the benefit of the audience, Kate, you mentioned the Seymour Hersh article. That refers to the MEK, the Mujahideen al-Haq, the group that that the State Department considers a terrorist group that was sheltered by Saddam Hussein, and the Israelis have been using them for assassination purposes. But what Seymour Hersh's article revealed was that the MEK terrorists were given secret training in Nevada under some covert program And there's a couple of other stories that have also come out recently, one in foreign policy, that Israel has made a deal with Azerbaijan to land their jets after they bomb Iran, which would make a bombing on Iran much more feasible. That scenario makes the possibility of an Israeli attack more credible, but there are some questions about that. But there's also some real possibilities that Israel has made a deal in Kurdistan to land their planes after attacking. So on the military side, things are moving ahead in terms of a military strike. On the diplomatic side, it seems that Senators McCain, Lieberman, and Graham are trying to sabotage what little progress is being made with this resolution. I'm sorry to go on for so long, but we've seen this movie before. The National Defense Authorization Act was cooked up by the same people to tie Obama's hands.
Right. And I do just want to clarify, because there is an important difference in that with this resolution itself, that it is a non-binding piece of legislation. One could argue that the resolution itself is not a technical authorization for the use of force. It certainly does ramp up the political pressure, and that's what matters. And we do see that that language. I mean, this often happens where these non-binding resolutions pass often unanimously, and then there is concerted effort underway to get that legislation in law. And that's what we've seen. So it started off as non-binding resolutions, and then we've seen the same language being used in the Iran sanctions package, which will be signed into law. So anyway, it all has the effect of ramping up pressure on the administration. And while it's true that the administration doesn't technically have to give in to that pressure, and they also, you know, didn't technically have to sign the National Defense Authorization Act either, but it creates that kind of political atmosphere that just makes diplomacy all the more impossible for the Obama administration or any administration. So I think that's really what it's about. And with the covert action, I mean, I think, and the covert war that's really already underway, I mean, I think that it's clear, you know, unless there is robust, sustained diplomacy, then we're just going to continue teetering on the brink of war with Iran, and there's going to continue to be this covert action going on or this proxy war going out on throughout the region, and until there is that robust, sustained diplomacy that can reach an agreement not just on the nuclear issue, but also a grand bargain agreement that can envision a real security framework for on regional issues as well as the nuclear issue.
Well, but the National Defense Authorization Act did tie the president's hands, and he threatened to veto the whole bill. Most people thought he should have been vetoing it because of the restrictions on civil liberties that are involved, which outraged a lot of people. But frankly, he was concerned that it would raise the price of gasoline in an election year, I think as a politician, and that's clearly happened at any rate, although largely to do with the speculation on Wall Street. So that's what I meant when I said we've seen this movie before. I mean, he just signed the Jobs Act, a terrible piece of legislation that's going to enable an enormous amount of fraud on Wall Street. He probably didn't want to sign it, but the Republicans are going to make an issue out of it if he didn't sign it. So, you know, you're a lobbyist on Capitol Hill. You know how the game is played.
Exactly. I mean, I guess I meant to say with this specific legislation, it's while the president doesn't have to follow the letter to the law technically like he does for the National Defense Authorization Act, because, I mean, it doesn't. Still, the president theoretically is the one directing the foreign policy with Iran, in theoretical terms. That this, in practical effect, it has it does ramp up the pressure and undermine, you know, diplomatic efforts to the point that of just making diplomacy impossible. So yes, I think we have seen this game before, and we've seen it in how hardliners have sabotaged potential diplomatic breakthroughs with Iran in the past, and in other areas like you've mentioned. So,
well, just in closing, what can our listeners do? You said that public action is going to shut this thing down.
Exactly, exactly. Well, everyone, I would encourage all your listeners to go to fcnl.org. And if you go to fcnl.org/Iran, we have lots more information about these dangerous resolutions and other legislation on Iran. And everyone can actually call Congress at 1-855-68-NO-WAR. And just call your member of Congress and urge them to vote against the Lieberman resolution on Iran and to speak out for diplomacy, not war, with Iran. So we've had over 300 phone calls a day in the last few weeks making the same message, and we've definitely heard that it's making an impact. People are also speaking out about this at town halls, at candidate forums, and we're seeing the results. So let's keep up the momentum and stop this dangerous push for war.
I thank you so much for joining us here today, Kate Gould.
Okay, thanks so much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Kate Gould, who is the Legislative Associate for Middle East Policy for the Friends Committee on Nationalist Legislation, a Quaker lobby in the public interest, fielding the largest team of registered peace lobbyists in Washington, D.C. She lobbies on Iran and Israel-Palestinian peace. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the political scandal in China that involves the murder of a British businessman.
Dark fiction, I guess an even split, and each new